John Fasella is the Director for Public Safety Markets for Tyco Electronics Wireless Systems. He has more than 25 years of experience in radio communications, the majority of it in public safety markets. He has a BS in electrical engineering from Georgia Tech, an MBA, and is a registered professional engineer. He also has been a firefighter for 20 plus years and an EMT for more than 17 years. He joins today to discuss communication systems used in the fire service. Thank you for joining us, John.
Thank you, Mary Rose.
Can you first tell our readers a bit about your background in the fire service?
Well, yes, I can. I'm one of those unusual people that fell in love with the fire service very early in life, and so I've moved around quite a bit, but I've always tried to serve as a volunteer or call firefighter. And so I've been in three different departments, three different parts of the country, Georgia, Illinois, and Massachusetts now, and I started back in 1974. I had a break in service at one point, but got right back into it again.
When you first started working in the fire service, can you tell me a little bit about how communications were handled?
Well, in the early 70s, it was radios were certainly a part of the fire service then. I think the largest difference was that it was mobile-centric. In other words, it was mobile radios that were in the fire apparatus, and portables were rare. And when they were used, usually just one officer had one. Today, what's happened is in many departments, even the suburban department that I'm a member of, every firefighter has a personal portable radio. We're expected to have it on scene, and we're expected to use it because it's a kind of life safety issue. Even in fairly rural departments, there's enough portable radios to go around so that the incident commander can talk to, you know, some of the other officers on the scene and the interior attack teams and so forth. So that's the biggest change. I would say the second change is not quite so much about communications as it is operationally. You know, incident command goes back to the early 70s, but really wasn't widely practiced in the fire service until I would say the 80s, at least in my experience. And now today, the fire service 100% embraces NIMS, ICS, and that drives a lot of what we do and how we communicate. And I think it sets the standard for how the communication systems, in a sense, have to be structured.
And you've addressed a little bit in the last question, but can you tell us a little bit more about how technology is different today compared to those early days when you were on the service, besides two-way radios? Are there any other issues operationally that you'd like to address?
Well, yes. I mean, one thing is that today I think we have, in effect, the ability to communicate in different segments. So you have at least three or four different levels at which we communicate. You have team-based communications wherein an attack team that's on a hose line or a truck team that's doing search and rescue or ventilation will be communicating amongst themselves, sometimes verbally, but sometimes with portable radios depending on the noise level, and quite often just by pushing and shoving and yelling at each other. So that's one level of communications. The second level of communications is the incident commander and or safety officer to those various teams, and of course SAFECOM in their statement of requirements has, you know, characterized that as incident area communications. And then the third level is the incident commander and or their designate back into the system to the dispatcher to get other resources dispatched, whether it be surrounding communities, apparatus, or specialized teams like hazmat. And that's, in SAFECOM definition, jurisdictional area communications. So in a sense, you have three levels of communication taking place: the teams amongst themselves, the teams to their officers on scene, and then the officers on scene, the incident commander, back to the greater system. And I think we didn't think about it like that in the 70s. You know, it wasn't something that we consciously thought about. And now today we're very conscious of it, and especially because both in the career fire service and in the volunteer fire service, we're quite often understaffed. We're often not meeting the NFPA levels for engines and trucks. So it means that we have to often mutual aid more frequently than we would, simply as a backup. And then when you have the additional requirement of RIC teams, which many areas are trying to practice, these are basically rescue teams to rescue the firefighters if they get trapped, you almost always have to call an additional alarm for extra resources.
What would you say are the key elements currently in today's world for successful communications based on your experience in the fire service?
Well, for one thing, you have to think in terms of building these different networks. In a simple incident, it's not much different than it was way back. I mean, you have the incident commander yelling at the troops and sometimes dispatching them with portable, and then you have the incident commander also talking back through the network to the dispatcher for additional resources. But when you start to get into a very large incident, then it gets much more complicated, and it's not hard for even a rural area to get into quite a large incident, maybe an industrial complex that's built away from hydrants and so forth, so they have to run tanker shuttles and stuff. So you get into, a whole group of people doing water supply that are completely different from a group of people that are staging, and you're trying to direct additional alarm assignments into a staging area, which is different from the people that are actually on the attack and ventilation teams and so forth. I think overall, in terms of, communications, the things that I've learned is that the simpler the system and the radio are to use, the better it is for firefighters. We're busy people. We have a lot in our mind. There's a lot of adrenaline going, and we're trained to look for hazards all the time. When we're crawling, we're tapping the floor with our feet or with a tool to be sure that the floor isn't going to collapse on us. We're searching for people inside of a building. The last thing we want to be thinking about is the radio working? What channel am I on? And things of that nature. So a complexity in radio is I think not a good thing. And I think the second thing is that the radio communications need not to get in our way. So the more that we can reduce the paraphernalia that's associated with the radio, the better we are. If you look at the way, for example, SCBA apparatus has evolved over the years, we've integrated it in a way that there's less stuff that dangles and is liable to get caught in obstacles as we're crawling around, and we're building into our turnout coats rescue handles and stuff so we can carry a downed firefighter out. So I think the same applies to radio communications. We have to think about making the radio not only simple to use, but not let it get in our way.
Let me ask the final question. What's your perspective on the digital fireground issue, its alleged inability to distinguish voice from background noise when used in high noise environments such as those found on the fireground?
Well, myself and many other people were involved in the International Association of Fire Chiefs digital working committee. We looked at this extensively. NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technologies, did some extensive testing, and under some conditions there are issues with all radios, not just digital, and in some conditions digital radios perform less well than analog radios. In some, at least one or two conditions, they actually perform better. So really what to me this all says is that we have perhaps expected radios to operate in terrible environments and just kind of put up with the performance that we got. The fire service now is taking a much harder look at this, and that's a good thing, because candidly, radio systems and portable radios and mobile radios were really designed more for law enforcement, and we have very different missions. We operate completely differently, as all of your readers will be well aware of. And so we have to look at, is the same radio and the same system necessarily going to work? I think the answer is not known at this time, but I don't have any belief that many of the problems that have been encountered so far cannot be overcome. The industry's working on it. We are, as a company, working on it, Tyco Electronics, and I think you're going to see in the next period of time a number of solutions being rolled out for the fire service that will greatly improve noise issues, whether the radio be analog or digital.
Well, excellent. Thank you for sharing your perspective, John.
Okay, thank you very much, Mary Rose.
That completes our podcast. This is Mary Rose Roberts. Thank you for listening.